Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
It's Mentally Yours from Ellen and Yvette. Focus on your mental health, you surely won't regret. It's mentally yours.
Hi everyone and welcome to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's weekly mental health podcast. I'm Yvette and today I'm chatting to Catherine Cho. She's an author and literary agent. We're going to be chatting about postpartum psychosis.
I was pregnant with my first baby, a son, in 2017. I had a pretty straightforward pregnancy and, you know, a slightly complicated labor, but nothing too crazy. And then we went traveling when my son was a couple months old to the U.S. We went on this very long journey, about 5 different cities. And during this time, I wasn't sleeping. My parents and my in-laws are Korean, and there's a lot of beliefs about how you should behave with a baby and, you know, be safe. And they thought we were being very risky in the way that we were traveling with our son. And so when my son was 3 months old, I looked at his face, and his face looked like the eyes of a devil to me. And that's basically the start of the psychosis. I thought I was a character in Dante's Inferno, and I ended up being sectioned in a psych unit in New Jersey, and I spent about 2 weeks
separated from my son. And have you experienced any mental health issues before that time?
No, I mean, that's, I think, why it was such a shock. I was, you know, I'd never experienced any mental health issues before then, and so I wasn't considered, you know, particularly high risk.
And when you mentioned that you were sectioned, what do you remember about that time? Because obviously you've written about it.
Yes, it's a very fragmented and frightening time. I lost all sense of kind of time and reality. And I just remember I was so convinced that we were in hell and that I was experiencing every moment kind of in duplicate moments. I was seeing like devils and people's faces didn't look like their faces. And, you know, it started, my husband took me to the emergency room. And I spent 4 days there and I wasn't sleeping. And that period of time to me you know, if somebody told me that was years, I wouldn't be surprised. It really felt so prolonged and long. And when I wasn't getting better, that's when it was decided that I would have to be moved to the psych unit. And the actual transfer, you know, I thought I was being euthanized. And I remember seeing just like animals surrounding me. And yeah, I had my kind of most complete mental break at that point. And apparently that's when I was being kind of restrained and I was eventually sedated. But I fought for my life because I thought I was being euthanized.
It all sounds incredibly scary.
Yeah, it was very, you know, it was a very terrifying experience. I think it was my first look into what it might mean to not be able to trust your senses. And it was a very frightening out-of-body experience,
for sure. How long were you actually in the psych ward before you sort of started to recover?
So I think they said it was a couple of days. I was given an antipsychotic called haloperidol and I was sedated. So I slept for a long period of time. And I think when I came to consciousness and I knew something was really wrong and I kind of had a sense of these like very fragmented memories. So it took a few days. And then when I was awake in the psych ward and knew what was kind of happening, that's when it was very surreal for me because I felt very much like an observer experiencing this place and just trying to figure out what had happened to me and also how I could leave.
And how did you work towards getting better from having that sort of break with reality to where you are now, I suppose?
So definitely medication. Yes, there was a lot of medication. I mean, I have to say that, you know, the psych unit wasn't particularly therapeutic. It's not really a place, I think, you know, that is conducive to getting better. But I spent a lot of time writing. I had a notebook with me and I tried to write down all the things that I knew was true and then the things that I knew that weren't true. So that helped me separate what had actually happened and didn't happen. And then by the time I was released, that was 10 days later, we flew back to the UK. I was, referred to a perinatal mental health team. And, that was, you know, really helpful because I also eventually, because of everything that happened, I had a very deep depression. And, it was just a recovery process, as I think a lot of these things are. And I, you know, spent a lot of time just kind of trying to understand and also accept what had happened and also not feel, I guess, scared of what happened as well.
What was your husband's response to what happened?
Yes, for him, I think it was really, really terrifying. You know, for him, he first of all, he didn't know what was happening to me and he could tell that something was wrong, but also didn't know the extent of it. And I think there's something, you know, really horrifying and terrifying of watching somebody you care about just, you know, lose their sense of reality. You know, he dropped everything for me. And, you know, I really credit him with just doing everything he could to try to make sure that I was safe, but also that I could get better. And he was very creative. He was continually lobbying for me and talking with doctors and, you know, lobbying for my care and making sure that I was on the right medications. And he did his best to make sure that I had as, you know, a quick of a recovery as possible.
And since then, have you been able to find other people who've been through similar, and has that been helpful?
Definitely. So when I was starting to recover, I knew the name of the diagnosis was postpartum psychosis. There is a forum and a charity called Action on Postpartum Psychosis, which is based in the UK, and it brings together women who've, you know, suffered from postpartum psychosis. And I spent a lot of time reading those forums. I think that was really helpful for me just to know, like, that this, you know, is a shared experience for people. It really helped me understand kind of that journey to recovery. And it is a process. It took, I think, a full year for me to feel kind of back to myself and to be off medication. And yeah, and also in the process of writing the book and getting the book published, I spoke to a lot of different women who had experienced this, one of whom was also Laura Dockrell, who wrote a memoir called What Have I Done, which was actually coincidentally published around the same time as
we've had her on the podcast.
Oh yeah,
and her husband. Yeah, they're both brilliant. Just before we get on to sort of the book a bit more and also the charity, do you mind telling us a bit about sort of what it was like, I suppose, the process of being with your son again? Because that must have been quite difficult to have had sort of that delusion and then go to a psych ward and then come back to him. Can you tell us a bit about the process of I guess, bonding again with him after that?
Sure. Yes, so I was separated from my son. And when I came back and he was, my parents brought him with them, and you know, I really struggled to even touch him or hold him. And, you know, now that I look back on it, I think that is probably a protection mechanism. You know, I wasn't a mother who could be trusted. So perhaps that's why that was such a physical, visceral reaction for me. But yes, I had trouble, you know, even holding him. I really couldn't do it for more than a few moments. And that was a, you know, a big part of the recovery, which was just to learn how to take care of him again, but also how to, you know, somehow overcome that, you know, severance that happened, the bond that was, you know, we didn't really have a bond when I came back out. And that was a very difficult thing as well to kind of admit to myself and also just to accept. And so, you know, a large part of the recovery was trying to spend more time with him, trying to, you know, do the things like follow the steps that I felt like a mother would do. And it took a really long time. Like I can't lie about that. It really was a struggle, and it's something that I put a lot of effort into that was very deliberate. And like, I hope that when he's older, I can kind of explain that, you know, hopefully that's evidence of, you know, love, which is, you know, putting in so much effort to try to build a bond again. But yeah, it definitely was a journey.
But it's difficult. I mean, obviously, you know, it's never anyone's fault when they get ill, but I can imagine it. You must have felt sort of guilt around it. And yeah, it's just such a difficult sort of situation.
Definitely. I mean, I think you feel guilt about so many things anyway. So feeling, yeah, guilt about, yeah, that it was a lot to kind of process and come to terms with.
Do you have other children now, or are you thinking about having other children? Do you mind me asking?
Oh, no, completely fine. Yes, actually, so I do. I have a daughter. She's 2. It was a really big decision. You know, I always had hoped that, you know, if we could have more than one child, that we could. But yeah, it became a bit more of a complicated decision because the chances of recurrence in postpartum psychosis is 50%, which is, you know, very high. And funny enough, I found out I was pregnant when I was promoting my book. And so people were kind of asking, like, would you ever consider having another child? And it was too early at that point for me to say, actually, I mean, I am, hopefully. But yes, so, and I was really lucky, you know, I was referred back to the mental health team. I had spent so much time, I think, thinking about and processing what had happened that I felt very confident, as much as I could, cautiously confident that I had recognized kind of all the triggers and the potential reasons for why I had psychosis. And so, yes, I was really lucky that I didn't have any complications when my daughter was born. I didn't have to go on any medication, which is usually, you know, a preventative thing. But that was something I talked about with my doctor as well. And yeah, I felt, you know, really lucky to be able to avoid anything like that this time around.
Well, congratulations on having another kid. And yeah, I totally understand the fear around that. I mean, it's not exactly the same, but with my bipolar disorder, it's sort of childbirth and stuff is a huge question. it's not something that I particularly want, because I know that I personally have never wanted kids. But if I was, say, a friend of mine does very much want kids, if I was the kind of person who would, that's always something I'd wanted, it would be a huge consideration, because I'd know I'd have to be thinking about sort of coming off the drug that I'm on, and yeah, wondering about whether I might go through postpartum psychosis, or if it might trigger mania, or all this sort of stuff. So it's yeah, that must have been a really big decision for you to have a second child. But yeah, I'm so glad it worked out all right. Yeah, it's sort of heavy stuff, isn't it? We're sort of getting into in the morning. Could you tell us a little bit more, because I'd love to hear a bit more about sort of other things that have helped. You mentioned sort of right off the bat, you know, the drugs that helped. Did you find that therapy helped at all, or like peer support stuff, or is there anything else in particular, whether it's sort of meditation or exercise or literally anything that kind of has been helpful on your recovery journey?
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, yes, definitely I had therapy, which was really, you know, very, I think, helpful in kind of the later stages of understanding why something happened the way it happened, and also just kind of examining, yes, like what parts of the psychosis that had felt so kind of out of the blue, but actually when you trace it back, you realize that a lot of these, you know, a lot of the things that led to it had been, you know, undercurrents through childhood, or even through, you know, previous family traumas. So that was incredibly helpful. I mean, I will also say, like, I, you know, writing in general, not the writing of the book perhaps, but I kept journals throughout, and that I found really helpful to kind of, because so much of the recovery process was so, like, even within one day, it was such an up and down. But to be able to kind of have a sense of being in touch with what I was feeling, I was really lucky that I had friends who would check in with me. And I think definitely knowing or feeling that you're not alone, that, you know, there are people who care about you, and that it's, you know, even if it's a very, very low point, that it's temporary. I think for me, like, the depression was definitely the hardest part. And I think I had to really just take it moment by moment and believe that it was not, that it wasn't always going to be that way. And for me, like, when I see people who go through difficult challenges, that's really kind of the most, you know, sad and tragic part of it sometimes, is that it does feel like it's never ending. And yeah, I think that for me was very important.
I think that leads us on sort of to action on postpartum psychosis. You've already kind of mentioned them, but why did you want to become an ambassador for the charity?
Yes, I mean, you know, I think what I think I really value about what they do is the conversation, the fact that, you know, it is very much about, like, having the conversation with people about talking about these experiences. I, you know, I'm surprised that, you know, so much about postpartum psychosis after I experienced it is shrouded in a lot of guilt, a lot of shame. There's a lot of secrecy. People, I think because it is a very terrifying disorder, and, you know, often, you know, when it's talked about in the media or when it's talked about on the news, it's very sensationalized, and it's horrifying. And I think it also breaks kind of that ultimate taboo of a mother who might harm, or, you know, is not a safe presence around their children. And I think Action on Postpartum Psychosis does a lot to kind of dispel that. You know, there's no, you know, it's not something to be afraid of. It's not something to suffer in silence, you know. And I think there is already so much guilt around motherhood anyway, but especially for mothers who experience something like that. And I think, you know, for me, what's really important is to show that, you know, even if it's not the extent of psychosis, so many of the things that, you know, women struggle with after giving birth is very shared, and there doesn't have to be any shame or stigma.
Absolutely. And can you tell us a bit more about what exactly the charity does?
Yes. So, you know, they have research that they do in order to kind of help find ways to support. They do a lot of education. There are resources for carers, for partners. I think actually the reason we found out about Action on Postpartum Psychosis was my husband was trying to Google how to care for me. And he found that pamphlet that they'd done for partners and carers on how to support somebody who'd gone through postpartum psychosis. They have the forum as well, but also, you know, they do a lot in terms of lobbying for mother and baby units all around the UK, and also just, you know, communicating with government officials as well about the need for mother baby units and, you know, the need for perinatal mental health support and education.
Can you tell us a bit more about the book now? So it's Inferno, a memoir of motherhood and madness. What challenges did you face when you were writing that?
Yes, so I started writing the book actually very during my recovery, very soon after the events of what had happened. And it started, I wanted to write an article about it just because I'd never heard of postpartum psychosis. But then very quickly, I realized that in order to understand a mental breakdown, you have to know what has been broken. And so, yes, I actually, and it might be because I was on so many medications, but I was very, very focused on the book. And I wrote the first draft only in a couple of months. And of course, I had to redraft quite a bit afterwards. But the initial writing of it, it really just flowed. And I felt kind of a compulsion to share, the experience and hopefully to give an understanding of what it might feel like to have your sense of reality blown apart and your sense of self blown apart. And then how do you begin to construct yourself and what does that actually mean?
What kind of response have you had to it? Because it's been out a little while now, hasn't it?
Yes, it came out in March of 2020, actually. But yes, it's been a really positive response. I've had, you know, that's been kind of the most moving part about it is that, you know, so many people have reached out to say that they'd experienced, you know, some of the emotions. And, you know, I think that's the other thing is like the loneliness of mental health. It can be very reassuring to see that other people experience, you know, the same kind of things. And I think that's, you know, my hope with the book was that to show kind of how universal a lot of these feelings are. But yeah, and I think one thing that I found really powerful is that for, you know, people who have experienced kind of maternal mental health, you know, I heard from people who said that it helped them talk with their mothers about their experience that, you know, the family had never discussed, that it was just a secret that nobody talked about. And that for me, I think is very powerful.
Well, I loved it. It's also just a really beautiful book, I thought. And it's also, it was very interesting to me as someone who didn't really know about it, but in terms of Korean culture, something I knew absolutely nothing about. So elements of that were sort of really interesting. But yeah, the language is just sort of really beautiful. How did your family feel about it?
Yeah, it was, my parents still haven't read the book. I asked them not to. I think for them, you know, it's part of the whole conversation about why it's important to have a conversation. But yeah, I think, you know, they're very private people. I'm actually, to be honest, a very private person as well. And I don't think they understood why I wanted to share something that was so private. And I think also definitely there's a cultural aspect of this is something that happened in the family, so let's keep it quiet. But I was trying to explain that, you know, that's kind of the point, that when that is the point. And so I felt really strongly about, you know, publishing it, about having it under my name. And, you know, I think for me, that was really important. My brother did read it and, you know, it really meant a lot to me that, you know, he felt it was a very accurate and he found it very moving. And so, yeah, that for me was really,
I think I'd like to wrap up now in terms of the chat, but I suppose there's two more things I'd like to ask. One of them is quite huge. So what do you wish people understood about postpartum psychosis?
That's a really good question. I wish people understood about postpartum psychosis Well, for one thing, I think if you're somebody who's experienced it, to know that there's really nothing that was your fault. I definitely spent a lot of time going over all the things that maybe led to what happened and how could I have avoided it and why did this happen and how could I have done that, you know, that put myself through this and my family through such a traumatic event and my son through such a traumatic event. But it took me some time, you know, to really process, understand that it was beyond my control. And so much of the motherhood and birth and all of that, you know, it is a shift of identity. It is a shift mentally, physically, emotionally, definitely psychologically. And so, you know, that's why psychosis happens. So I want, you know, to show that it's nothing to be afraid of or ashamed of. And I think that's, you know, what Action on Postpartum Psychosis as well does really brilliantly. That's probably the most important element of the mission, is to take away the fear of it.
Absolutely. And finally, is there anything else you'd like to add, just in general, or about what you're working on next?
I mean, I hope to just continue, you know, being able to work with Action on Postpartum Psychosis. You know, I think, especially with the pandemic and everything that's been happening with, you know, the NHS, and I, you know, for me, it's so important having experience. I mean, I could have, you know, there could be a whole other element to the book about what it felt like to be in the US without health insurance and just kind of the terror of, you know, the logistics surrounding that and falling through a net. And I'm so grateful that I was able to come here and we live here, and the fact that there is that support network. And I had a glimpse of what it's like on the other side of that. And it is very frightening. And especially with the birth of my second child, that kind of prevention, the conversations and the care that I was able to have. I mean, yeah, I think that's such an invaluable and important aspect. Definitely of the experience as well.
So this is goodbye for Mentally Yours. So go away, enjoy your day, get on with all your chores. From Mentally Yours.
If you've been affected by any of the issues we've been chatting about today, please give the Samaritans a ring on 116 123.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and subscribe to our channel, and perhaps even go back and listen to some old episodes. We have many of them.
Also, you can get in contact with us. We have a lovely Facebook group, which is called Mentally Yours, and we're also on Twitter at MentallyYRS.
See you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.